One Finance and Money Control present Personal Finance Unlocked. Download the One Finance app. Investments in the securities market are subject to market risks. Read all the related documents carefully before investing.
Hello and a very warm welcome to yet another enlightening webisode of Personal Finance Unlocked by One Finance, powered by Money Control, where we look at the intricacies of personal finance, help you navigate through complexities to empower you with knowledge and skills and guide you in making informed financial decisions. Today, we talk about one of the most essential fabric of our financial landscape, taxation. Simply put, taxation, as you know, is a system where the government imposes charges on individuals and businesses to fund public services and government activities. It serves as a primary source of revenue, enabling the government to finance infrastructure, education, healthcare, and various public programs. You, on the other hand, do your job of a good citizen and comply by the rules and regulations and pay a part of your income as taxes towards this development and on services that you use. So today, we speak to you about taxation, but we are not talking about tax evasion, and that should be understood. We are talking about tax liabilities, how can you optimize your tax planning and financial goal setting and do some tax saving. Joining me today, CA Chajer Piyush Soharanji, partner Chajer & Doshi, Central Council member, ICAI. Piyush, welcome to the show. I'm so glad you're here to talk about taxation and also to answer all the questions that we have been receiving from our viewers. So first off, when we talk about taxation, everybody fears it. Tax planning sort of becomes like a draconian task when you're looking at those papers and when you're looking at those sections. But when we talk about tax saving and how we can use the regulations that are provided by the government in planning our taxes, how should one be going about it? Or how should they start their journey?
Thank you very much, Mukta. First of all, thank you for inviting me over here. It's my pleasure to be here, and thank you very much. When we talk of tax, obviously, I understand. Let us have a concentration more from a perspective of an individual and HUF, obviously. And obviously, as I said, you have rightly mentioned, there's no question of tax avoidance. We are talking of tax planning, whereby you can use certain benefits, certain deductions which are available under the law, by making certain expenditure if you are incurring actually, or by making certain investments, you get a benefit under the Income Tax Act. If I can specifically speak of certain for which is available for individual cases, because most of your, I believe the viewers would be an individuals, maybe a salaried or may not be a salaried employees. They may be drawing a business income. They may have an income from other sources like interest, dividend. They may be earning income by way of rentals, which will be taxable under the income from house property. So there are very two specific important provisions which are available under the Income Tax Act, which we call it Section 80 capital C and Section 80 capital D. These are the basic sections where the benefits are available under the income tax event today. Obviously, there are changes in the law. There are options available whether you want to claim the benefits under this particular sections or not. But yes, there is an option available wherein you can still continue to avail the benefit or for a particular different tax rate which is available to you and claim the benefits. I would first like to address on Section 80 capital C. What Section 80 capital C is? Under the income tax, we have a certain deductions which are available from the gross total income. If a particular expenditure or an investment is made in accordance with Section 80C. So Section 80C provides for certain deductions out of the gross total income. Gross total income, as you all know, would be the income earned from the various streams. You may be having an income under the salary, income from business, income from other sources, that is, I mentioned, interest, dividend, income from house property, that is rental income. Once you arrive at the gross total income, there are certain deductions which are available to you. If you have incurred an expenditure which falls, which is covered under Section 80C, let's take an example. You have paid a tuition fees for your children. Up to two children, whatever tuition fees has been paid, it is deductible. up to rupees 1,50,000. ATC provides for an overall limit of claiming deduction to the extent of rupees 1,50,000. You can claim those particular deductions. These deductions may be by way of an expenditure incurred towards the education of your children, limited to 2 children. So if you have a 3 children and you have incurred an expenditure though below 1,50,000, put together for all 3, like you have a school fees, tuition fees, which is 40,000, and you're paid for 3 students, which comes to 1,20,000, you can claim only 40 into 2, 80,000. If you have paid 75,000 for each particular children and you have 2 children, 75 into 2, you can claim 1,50,000. If you have paid 90,000 for each children and you have paid for 2 children, which goes to 1,80,000, the total deduction would be restricted to 1,50,000. So this is one of the restrictions, one of deductions along with the restriction which is available under Section 80C. Similarly, if you are incurring an outflow towards repayment of the housing loan, you have taken, bought a house on a loan, and there is a principal repayment which is happening on a year-to-year basis. So whatever amount you have repaid towards a principal, which otherwise is not deductible under the income tax law, you will get a deduction to the extent of 1,50,000, again under Section 80C, if you have made some principal sum of home loan. Now, please mind it, when I talk of Section 80C, it's an overall limit of 1,50,000. So if you have claimed everything 1,50,000 completely under the education expenses, that is tuition fees, etc., for the 2 children, then you will get no further deductions. So these are the total deduction available to the extent of 1,50,000. Other things which are available under ATC, other alternatives which are available could be registration fees and stamp duty, which you have paid for acquisition of house property. These are towards expenditure. Let's talk of any investments which you can make. These are eligible investments, which we generally call, which are covered under the Section 80C. That is investments in provident funds, that is PPF, public provident fund. Life insurance premiums which have been paid, you invest in equity linked saving schemes. So there are ELSS schemes which have been floated by various mutual funds. If you invest into that, you get a deduction under ATC. Then there is for a girl child, there was a scheme which called Sukanya Samriddhi Yojana, wherein a better interest rate of 8.5% was available. If you would have invested, you would have made a deposit under that particular scheme. That capital amount which has been deposited would be considered as an eligible under Section 80C. Then a National Savings Certificate, which is generally used by issued by the Post Department, Senior Citizen Savings Schemes, National Pension Scheme, Unit Link Insurance Plan, Pension Fund, any contribution to pension fund set up by the National Housing Bank, subscription to any particular bonds. So there are certain investment schemes which have been provided under Section 80C. So that would be the one of the area which I believe is very much beneficial for the purpose of individual who can claim a deduction maximum to the extent of rupees 1,50,000. So that's the one. Secondly, which I would, I'm taking liberty, Mukta, of also covering at this point of time Section 80D, because these are the 2 most important deductions which generally everybody is able to claim. Because either you are incurring expenses or you are actually investing in such streams. Similarly, Mediclaim, we would find most of our individuals who are taxpayers would have a Mediclaim insurance available with them. So if you're paying any insurance premium to the extent of 25,000 for yourself and family, when I talk of family, obviously your spouse and your children are covered, you can get an additional deduction of rupees 25,000. If you have an parents who are below 60 years and if you're paying premium for them also, to cover a medical insurance, additional 25,000 would be available. So 25,000 for your family, 25,000 for your parents. And if your parents are senior citizens, that is they are aged above 60 years, and you have paid any insurance period, then instead of 25,000, you get a limit of 50,000 rupees. So you can claim under Section 80D ranging from 25,000 rupees, and it can go up to 75,000. And in certain cases, if you yourself as an individual are above 60 years, you also can get a limit of 50,000 plus additional 50,000 for the parents. So this is also ATC and ATD, which I could thought of very briefly, very as an immediate reaction to what you said, what are the benefits available. I think so this could be the 2 important areas which individual or HUF tax assessees should look into it. Yeah.
Right. It's almost like how you plan your life and how you go on in your life doing things, whether it is your own education, your health, when you're buying a home or you are investing in your children's education, looking after your parents. The tax system allows and gives you a lot of benefit and allows you to make those, allows you to use those benefits really if you are planning your financial life in accordance with your tax planning. What are the recent changes in tax laws that businesses and individuals need to be aware of? Are there any recent changes that have implications in the coming financial year?
Definitely. Now, obviously, when I talk of financial year, I'll restrict to a financial year which is ongoing. That is financial year 23-24. And there are a lot of changes made. Now, I just spoke about deductions which are available in respect of certain expenditure and certain class of investment which is made under section 80C or 80 capital D. Now, these are all made optional. Let's take an example. There is a new tax slab rate which has come. And if you want to, that is which we call a default tax regime. If you opt for, if you go for a tax payable under the default tax regime, these deductions are not available. So these deductions are available only if you opt for old tax regime. What does the old tax regime says? What does the new tax slab says? Under the new tax slabs, the basic exemption limit has been increased. The difference of tax slabs, for an example, in the new tax slab rates, I do not pay any tax up to 3 lakhs. Thereafter, for every 3 lakhs, I pay a tax rate of 5%, which keeps on increasing by another 5%. For an example, 0 to 3 lakhs, there's no tax. From 3 to 6, it is 5%. 6 to 9, it is 10%. Then 9 to 12, it is 15%. 12 to 15, it is 20%. And above 15, only it is 30%. Now, if you are falling under the default tax regime, and if you do not opt for the old tax regime, you are not allowed any of such deductions. We were just discussing about section 80C, capital 80D. Other than 80C and 80D, also there are a lot of other deductions which are available, which we call under the income tax as a chapter 6A deduction. Now, chapter 6A deductions are only available if you are not opting, if you are not opting for, are available only if you are opting for old regime. So if you are opting for new slabs, which are quite lower, tax rates are lower, slabs have increased from a basic exemption from 2.5 to 3 lakhs and thereafter 5% only it increases. But you lose the benefits or deductions available under section 80C and 80D. But if you still opt for an old tax regime, which is an option available to you, with you, you have to file that option before you file your tax return. So let's take an example for financial year 23-24. You would be filing your tax returns before 31st July 2024. Before filing your tax return, you have to opt for the old regime if you want to claim the benefit of those deductions. And every individual taxpayer, so it's becoming a little complicated to that extent. What is your level of income? You need to look into it. For an example, if my income is only to the extent of 5 lakhs, obviously I cannot make an investment because I require money in hand, a liquid funds for also spending it. Then in such cases, I may opt for an old tax regime because any amount up to 5 lakhs is exempt because of a rebate available. Otherwise, under an old tax regime, the tax rate exemption is only up to 2,50,000. And between 2,50,000 and 5 lakhs, I have to pay 5%, which is 12,500. But I get a rebate benefit. So I practically, I do not pay any tax up to 5 lakhs under the old regime. Now, under the old regime, that rebate was also available. And those deductions were also available. So for every individual, he will have to work out, look into it, compare under which income bracket he is falling. If I my income is 5 lakhs, I need to work out what is my tax liability based on the benefits available under section 80C and 80D. And what is the rebate available? If I fall, if my income, and I may also do a working under a new tax regime. Well, I will not get any deduction under section 80C and 80D, and then see which is the beneficial. So whichever is the beneficial, I will opt for that. So this is the recent changes. Of course, there was a changes. This changes also came in during financial year 21-22. But those tax rates were different. Slabs were different. But recently, which is applicable for the first time for financial year 23-24, tax slabs and tax rates have gone down with deduction of all the benefits available for the investments and expenditure is quite good. It's quite impressive. So every individual will have to do this two working, see to it which is more beneficial to him, and then opt for the whether old regime or continue with the default new regime.
Noted. That's an important point here, which is that with the change in rules and regulations and the newer inclusions, one needs to figure whether they want to follow the old tax regime or the new tax regime and take a call in time of your filing of taxes, and also calculate which is going to be beneficial for you at the end of the day for your tax saving purposes. Now, when we talk about investments, Piyush, one often talks about mutual funds, bonds, fixed deposits, stocks, etc. What are the tax implications on the gains made on these? And how much should one be investing in all these instruments? Because as you already mentioned, there is a cap at the end of the day. So what is a good diversification of portfolio then from tax point of view?
From a tax point of view, necessarily it's not important that you are aware to you specifically mention about mutual funds, stocks, bonds, debentures. I do not get any benefit at the source as far as these are concerned. Let's take an example. When I mentioned certain list of investments in Section 80C, there were specific equity-linked saving schemes. So the individual will have to look into it when they are investing into this mutual funds. They are not eligible under Section 80C. So they are not getting any tax benefit of the capital amount which is invested, even of 1,50,000. Only if it is an ELSS scheme, which is called equity linked saving schemes, wherein your returns on those investment is quite less when compared to a regular mutual fund. So as far as tax rebate or the tax deduction is concerned, out of my total income of the capital invested in the bonds, shares, mutual funds, there is no tax benefit per se. But there's another way of the benefit which I look at it. Let's take an example. If I'm investing in the mutual funds for a long term, maybe for a period of more than 1 year, and if I redeem a mutual funds after 1 year, then I'm not paying though my tax bracket may be a 30% tax bracket, wherein I have another income of 15 lakhs and above, still the income from mutual funds, which have been held for more than 1 year, or which are equity oriented, would be treated as long-term capital gains. When I say it would be treated as long-term capital gains, I am paying tax only of 20%. So otherwise, I would have paid off 30%. Let's take an example. Instead of mutual fund, I would have invested in fixed deposit. Those fixed deposit would have given me an interest. And I'm going with the presumption that I'm already in a higher tax bracket of a 30% because my income is more than 15 lakhs on another account. So if I invest this amount in fixed deposit, I may get 7%, I may get 8%, but that would be subject to 30% tax. So my return post-tax would, after, if I presume it of 7%, I reduce 30% tax out of it. My post-tax return hardly comes to 4.9% technically. Whereas if I compare to a mutual fund, which are growth-based, and they do not declare dividend, I wait up till the redemption. I wait up till the end of the 1 year. And if there is an increase in the valuation of, which we call NAV, net asset valuation of those mutual funds, if there is an increase in the value, I pay tax only on the difference of my purchase cost and my sale cost. I also get a benefit of indexation, capital gain indexation, and I pay a 20% tax rate. So let's take an example. If I had invested 100 rupees in the mutual fund, which I redeem after the period of 2 years for 105 rupees. So on this 5 rupees, I pay only 20% tax. Though 5 rupees, I'm just taking an example, if I redeem after 2 years, technically my gain should be 20 rupees. Then only because the mutual fund yield is 10% to 11%, which a lot of mutual funds are claiming. So I presume a 10% yield. But if I pay only 20% tax on it, my post-tax yield is still 8%. So every individual need to look into it post-tax yield. So there is no benefit in such an instruments at the source, capital benefit, which we call, because when you are investing in such schemes, you do not get benefit under Section 80C or 80D. But the tax rate applicable on the income earned out of the mutual funds, if it is not in nature of dividend, because dividend is taxed at the regular rate, but if it is in nature of a capital gain, that is a growth appreciation, you get a tax benefit. So every individual needs to look into it, number one, first. whether he's going to claim, whether he has any option available. His tax bracket is such that he should claim benefit under Section 80C, that he may invest into investment schemes which are available under 80C, like PPF to the extent of 1,50,000. And the balance amount he can invest into these shares, stocks, irrespective, because there's no tax benefit, number one. But the income which will be earned on redemption or on the sale of equity or on the redemption of the mutual funds would be taxable at the lower rate, which is 20%. So he need to take a decision based on that.
Noted. Let me move our attention to inheritance and windfall gains and whatever you get as gift, assets you get as gifts. We've been talking for a long time about inheritance tax that may or may not come in the near future. But what about the implications at the moment?
If you talk of inheritance tax, obviously a lot of newspapers are speaking about that there would be an inheritance tax come. But I have, my personal view would be, this has been discussed in 6 years and 7 years. As of today, there is no inheritance tax. If my parents, if the parents of any particular assessee expires, leaves behind some assets, they can be inherited by his legal heirs without any tax implications as of today. So what has been talked is that inheritance tax may come in. There is already an inheritance tax, which is either termed as inheritance tax. Loosely, it is also called debt tax somewhere in USA. There is also estate duty, which has been called that whatever is the value of the assets in this country, which is inherited by the legal heirs of the person who has deceased, they have to share certain portion of that amount. If I'm not wrong, there is around 35% in USA with a very high threshold limit. In India, as of today, there is no inheritance tax. Whether it will come in the future is a question mark. According to me, since last 7 years, this has been discussed, but it has not seen light of the day. And I also don't feel that it will come in the newer future. Mm-hmm. A lot of people have been working around that if estate duty comes in, can we plan taxes that we may not have to pay tax, like they are packing their assets in a trust, or they are parking in assets in a limited liability partnership wherein they can plan, and inheritance tax may not be applicable. This is all may not be applicable. If the government comes with the inheritance tax, obviously there could be a high exemptions, obviously like a residential flat, agricultural land, considering the Indian environment, political environment. Obviously there would be exemption for residential flats, I would think of agricultural land, I could think of, plus certain high threshold limits, and only beyond a particular point the tax would be, estate duty or inheritance tax would be applicable if at all it comes. But as of now, I would only say that there's no tax. Gifts are mm-hmm. exempt even today amongst relatives. If it is received from a relative, which is any of your lineal ascendant or descendants, there's a long list available under Section 56. If you receive any gift from relatives, it's not taxable. If you receive a gift from a non-relative, then only it is taxable. Whereas inheritance is always presumed it will come from it will be received by a legal heir from his ascendants only, basically. And therefore, it would not be taxable under the gift. And inheritance tax is not expected today. So I would like to leave with that over today.
Right. The other area of tax learning, which is very complicated, which can be very complicated and often confuses people, is capital gains tax, long term, short term. And a lot of times people wonder whether it is better to, especially on real estate, they wonder whether it is better to pay the capital gain tax and have the money free, or reinvest the money quickly so that you don't have to pay taxes. But what is the correct formula, or what is the right way of assessing this tax implication?
So before I go to what would be the correct way of assessing whether I should reinvest and save taxes, or whether I should pay tax and use my money the way I wanted, it all depends upon the individual goals. Now, before I go on to those, let us understand what the long-term capital gains tax is and what are the reinvestment benefits available broadly. I will try to cover. So as I said, let's take an example. I have certain investments in the equity shares. I invested 100 rupees 10 years back, and I'm getting 200 rupees today. So after 100 rupees will be index. Let's take an example. Index cost of acquisition, 100 becomes 150 rupees. But I'm realizing 200 rupees today. for that particular equity share. So 50 rupees, I'm making a profit on a particular equity share. And I have a 1 lakh shares of those particular company. So I make a 50 lakhs profit. Now I have an option. I pay a 10% tax rate, which is actually a tax rate applicable to an equity instrument, that is an equity shares of a listed company. So I pay a tax of 10% on this 50 lakhs, pay 5 lakhs and use 45 lakhs the way I want to it, number one. Or if I want to save this 5 lakhs, now these are options are available under section 54F, where we say if I invest this amount of 50 lakhs, complete amount is invested into a residential flat, I do not pay tax. Of course, there are certain conditions that if I am investing into a residential flat, I should not be owning more than one property on that particular date. That property which I have invested today to claim this tax benefit, I should hold it for at least 3 years. I can't sell it for 3 years. If I sell it before 3 years, then whatever tax I had saved, I have to pay a particular tax. So the person will have to actually organize and look into ahead that what are his goal, why he's selling those equity shares. Let's take an example. I'm selling equity shares because it has achieved what it was achieved. There's no further gain going to happen. And therefore, I'm selling. Then obviously, he will look forward to reinvest into another equity, number one. If he's actually selling those shares to buy a residential flat, a roof for him, which is not available to him, or he may consider that, yes, I have one particular flat, but I want to buy another flat, then obviously he can invest. But while investing into that particular flat, he is also concerned because this is his second flat. He has to look into it. What would be the returns available if he's not using for his own residential purpose? What would be the rentals which I would be getting? What would be the returns in terms of rental? What would be returns in terms of appreciation? So he need to compare these two aspects. Whether I pay this 10% tax or I invest in a residential flat, which will appreciate more. And the rentals may be less, maybe 3%, 4% yield, but it will appreciate in the long term and ultimately yield would be 6 to 7%. But if I pay tax 10% at upfront, then my 10% of capital is already lost by way of taxes. I am left with 90 rupees, that is 45 lakhs. I would be reinvesting 45 lakhs in my business. If my business can make obviously more than 7 to 8%, that is compared with rental income and appreciation. If my business can make me more, then it makes sense. I pay tax, take 45 lakhs and put it into business or put it into mutual funds, which are giving me a better return than the rentals and the appreciation of the house property. So he will have to take that particular decision, obviously, at every point of time. I always suggest if you are not decisive at that moment of time, because it's not easy to decide. And you have a surplus money wherein you are free of your mind that whether I should pay tax and use whatever way I want to talk, right. I want to do. And if you're not able to decisive, then income tax gives you a certain time limit to invest. It gives you 2 years to 3 years you can invest. Sure. So meanwhile, those you can park it in a fixed deposit scheme. That is, we call capital gains account scheme. So you continue to earn interest. And if you do not, if you want to continue to keep it liquid after 3 years, you can tell your income tax officer, say 3 years are over. I'm not investing in the residential flat. I'm ready to pay tax today. So you will pay same tax which you would otherwise would have paid 3 years before. So if you see it in terms of inflation, you are practically not paying much. You are deferring the tax liability, number one. You are protecting your capital also. And you are paying tax after 3 years, the same tax rate, which is 20%. That is a tax saving which you had done. So my suggestion at this stage would be, obviously, everybody would have to look at his goals. What is the purpose? Why are he selling that particular asset and earning a long-term capital gains? If that purpose is very specific, obviously, he will have to do that. If he wants the money for a particular education expenses or for some marriages or for his personal use, obviously, only way would be to pay tax and utilize the way it wants. But if there is no purpose defined, he can look at it in reinvesting where the tax can be saved and compare both the prospectives and then take a decision.
We also talk about retirement planning and how we should use these tax tools for effective retirement planning or an emergency fund planning. From that point of view, what can your suggestions be?
Considering a retirement planning tax savings, if you tell me, the best which I could think of is like a public provident fund. When you are making an earnings today or a pension scheme of the government, a pension scheme which is run by various banks, that's State Bank of India and other banks also, which we call National Pension Scheme, a contribution to them a contribution in public provident fund. So this will help you in building a corpus over there, and you also get a tax benefit under Section 80C if you're availing an old regime today. Let's presume you are not getting a tax benefit under Section 80C because you have gone into a default new regime. Still, the income or the interest which is earned from a scheme like a public provident fund is exempt. So you're not paying a tax on the interest. If the interest on the PPF which is today is at 7.1%, it is completely tax-free. So if I, even if I compare with another instrument which is giving me a 9% or 10% yield, I would be paying 10%, 20% or maybe 30% depending whether you are investing in mutual funds which are equity-based or it's a mutual fund which is debt-based or it's a fixed deposit. So your tax, post-tax return after paying tax may be less, but in PPF you are getting 7.1%. Plus it is also secured in a way that it is secured under the Consolidated Fund of India of the PPF. So you can definitely invest into a PPF, get an initial tax benefit, and also the interest which gets accumulated on the PPF would be quite a corpus. So let's take an example. If I am a salaried employee and I'm working over a period of 20 years, 30 years from my age from bracket from 30 to 60, I can maximum make an investment of 1,50,000, which is permissible. And 1,50,000, if I'm investing, if I accumulated it over a period of 30 years and the interest has also been compounded, obviously, I could have a quite a good retirement fund, which would be completely tax-free at the end of the 30 years when I'm retiring at the age of 60. This 1,50,000, my contribution for 30 years would be 45 lakhs. And interest at 8% would be accumulated, which will run into crores of rupees at that moment of time and can serve a very good tool for tax saving, for protection of the capital, tax saving on the interest which is getting accumulated. And ultimately, it would be available to you out of the Consolidated Fund of India and therefore much secured. So I would suggest that these two, three schemes are very good for the retirement planning.
One of the questions, Piyush, that everybody is concerned about is asking is regarding cryptocurrencies and all the money that has been parked there. So for people who have been investing in cryptocurrencies and have their money parked in exchanges abroad, what are the tax implications as of now?
For this particular financial year, as far as cryptocurrency is concerned, there is a lot of clarity which has come that how it would be taxed, whatever is the difference that has been earned between the purchase price of that particular crypto and sales would be taxed at the normal tax slabs. So if your tax slabs is 30%, which could be called full tax. But as far as the previous old cases are concerned, there was a lot of dispute. There were two different legal views whether this should be taxed as an income, a regular income, which would be taxed at full tax slabs, that is 30%, or if you are falling in a lower tax bracket, that whatever tax bracket is applicable, or would it be taxed as a capital gains? But I believe after this last budget and from this financial year 23-24, there's quite a clarity. So whatever profits you have been making on the trading of cryptocurrency, I would say, when I say, or you are investing in cryptocurrency and you are again drawing it, you would be taxable at whatever profits you have made at the full tax slabs. So it's a regular tax slabs like any other income that you are earning.
Right. What are the tax implications on foreign investments and perhaps assets of Indian residents that they may have purchased abroad or have invested in?
In case of Indian residents, as far as our income tax law is concerned, all income arising wherever, maybe based on the foreign assets, would be taxable in India. The very first important point which keeps to be in mind is that in case of a resident Indian, if a particular assessee, particular person is a tax resident in India, he has to offer all the income wherever it is lying. Let's take an example. I was a non-resident when I invested into the shares. I was working in USA. I have certain deposits in USA. I have certain equity holding lying in USA. And I become a resident subsequently because I travel back to India. And if I'm filing my tax return as a resident in India, whatever income is earned, maybe by way of interest, maybe by way of dividend, you will have to offer for taxation in India and pay full tax rate, number one. Furthermore, you need to keep a track that whatever foreign assets are there, assets in the form of deposits, in the form of residential property, maybe in the form of, as I said, equity shares, there, whatever income is earned thereon, would be also taxable in those particular countries. So you will have to be aware of what is the tax rate applicable to that particular country. Let's take an example. I have a certain assets in USA. There is a local tax. Interest is taxable over there. Dividend is taxable over there. If I sell a property which I was been held in USA and I sell it tomorrow, there's a long-term capital gains over there. Plus, this income would be again taxed in India only. But since there is a double tax avoidance agreement between India and USA, whatever tax has been deposited in USA, you get a credit in India. So effectively, what is happening, if I'm depositing 100 rupees in USA and tax liability in India on such income is coming 120 rupees, for an example, I will deposit only 20 rupees in India because 100 would be already deposited in the USA, so we'll get a tax credit. Let us take an example other than USA, like an UAE country, where there is no individual taxation today. So all income which is earned out of the assets located in UAE, whether it's in securities, whether it's a real estate, whatever, is not taxable in USA. In UAE, in the hands of the individual. But they will continue to be taxed in the hands of an India, like any normal taxpayer. So if the individual who is having any foreign assets needs to be aware of this, that this foreign assets, whatever income is earned on those assets are offered in his income tax return, number one. If you have not earned any income during the year and it is just getting your values of those assets are increasing, it's like a mutual fund, it's a real estate, there's only appreciation, there is no income accrual happening on year to year. It may not be taxed in the year because there's no accrual of the income in that particular year, but whenever you actually liquidate them, it would be taxed. Secondly, what you need to keep it into mind, though there is an income or not, when you are filing a tax return, if a resident person is filing a tax return, he has to declare all the foreign assets. If you are not declaring foreign assets, you are inviting a penalty which ranges up to 10 lakh rupees for a one particular default. And there are judgments, there are now judicial precedents which says that if you have not declared, you may be imposed a penalty. So all residents, even if you have a small bank account, just take an example. I was a student. I went to UK for a study and I came back. And this account continues with a very small balance of $50. There's no income, only the balance is continued. Please declare that bank account in your tax return when you are filing it as a resident. Because now you have become an Indian resident, you continue to hold that bank account, which though contains only a balance of $50 or 50 pounds, whatever maybe, you will have to declare. So you have to be cautious on that.
Well, that's a great point from students' point of view, because almost all students who are studying abroad by virtue of living there, even though temporarily, have to have a bank account. And this is a good advice for students, especially when they come back, they need to declare that they were holding a bank account on foreign soils. Before I let you go, we want to talk about estate planning and how to ensure that process is smooth and hassle-free. What kind of tax implications can come because of that, and how to ensure that, and how financial advisors, especially players like One Finance, are doing that bit where coaching is so important, and effective planning comes with effective advisory.
So Mukta, as I said, as far as estate planning is concerned, it's very important to person to decide what is the future for him, basically. Let's take an example today. As I said, I will again go back that there's no estate duty in India today. So whatever you want put your assets today, you can put it in any particular form. It will get inherited by your legal heirs or your nominees very easily. Let's take an example. I have assets which are in nature of liquid assets, fixed deposits. I have a Demat account where I have an equity shares, mutual funds. I can just put your nominee. That nominee can be my legal heir also. It can be any other person other than legal heir also. Those assets will be transferred to him, to a nominee, even if he is not related to me, even if he is not legal heir as per the definition. Then also it will go to him. It will be transmitted to him without any tax impact. So it's very, very, very smooth and process if you are putting a nominee. If you are not putting a nominee, then you have another tool which you can do through a will. You can make a will of your own. You can list out all your assets, whom it will be devolved in your absence. You can make a mention of them. when if it is devolving to a legal heir, no issues. Even if it is not devolving upon the legal heir, if you want to devolve that particular asset to any third party, you can do it through a will. There is no tax implications. So when it comes to tax implications in case of estate planning, when I talk of estate planning today, I'm talking in a terms when I am not there. So if I take my own particular case, my estate planning, I'm more concerned when I am not there, and my estate should be smoothly transmitted to the legal heirs or anybody else whom I want to do it. So I can do it through a nomination, I can do it through a will, or I can make a trust today. I can make a trust, I can appoint a trustee, I can write down in a trust. It is such a flexible instrument which gives me all the liberty to write whatever I want to. How it will transpire, whether the assets will continue to remain in the particular trust even in my absence here forever, and only the incomes would be distributed to my legal heirs or any other beneficiaries who may be a legal heir, may not be a legal heir. So I can have a trust deed also in a manner wherein my assets are transferred during my lifetime to a particular trust. That trust will hold those particular assets. I can define who will be the beneficiaries therein. Beneficiaries can be fluid. It can be defined in names, or it can be only relationships, and it will continue. It will continue over a period of time. Objectives can be defined. So it will flow. The only disadvantage of a trust today is that trusts are taxed like an individual, and it is taxed at a little higher rate and higher surcharge. So that it may not be a very tax effective instrument, but still it is a very good way of transmitting an assets for the purpose of my benefits. And I can also cover up whatever beneficiaries I want. I can write. It gives me a lot of flexibility, and therefore it's a very good instrument. And then it could be structured in a good manner. If I do not have such a substantial assets where I want to take a draft a trust deed, appoint a trustee, I don't want to go that, then the best way is go through a will and put a nomination. As far as liquid assets are concerned, liquid means shares, house are concerned, flats are concerned, you can still give a nomination therein. But yes, I strongly recommend to make a will, even if you have put a nominee, because nominee is generally a trustee of a legal heir. And therefore, if you write a will and you make a mention in the will itself that all these particular assets will directly go to nominee, or it will go to anybody else other than the nominee, please, you can clarify that all in the will. So it's otherwise, it's a hassle fee. There's no tax when it comes to succession because of death of a particular individual. There's no tax implications.
C.A. Piyush, thank you so much for your time and all these insights. I'm sure whoever was with us and watching this webisode have gone back with a lot of insights, with a lot of points to ponder upon, whether it is tax planning to match with your financial goals in life, from investment point of view, from estate planning, etc., etc. This was a very, very informative session. Thank you so much for your time.
One Finance and Money Control present Personal Finance Unlocked. Download the One Finance app. Investments in the securities market are subject to market risks. Read all the related documents carefully before investing.